Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Hey Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Tinach, the Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel. We were trying to establish the principle that Aseh Doka Lo Taseh. We also had a principle that Rabbi Yehuda is only Doresh Smuchim, where two Sukim are juxtaposed, that we are Doresh significance from that in Sefer Dvarim. The Gemara asks, why does Rabbi Yehuda do that in Sefer Dvarim? The Gemara gave two reasons. One possibility is because Muchach, the fact that this Isur or this Aseh is found in this location when there's another parsha in the Torah where it should belong gives it significance, and that's why we're Doresh Smuchim. Or because Afnuye, because it's an extraneous term, and since it's an extraneous term, he learns out Smuchim. So we establish, according to Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, who believe that the word Beged means Tzemru Pishtim, then the words Tzemru Pishtim by Tzitzit and Kilayim are extraneous. Because they are extraneous, we are then able to Doresh Smuchim. And once we're Doresh Smuchim, the juxtaposition of the restriction against Kilayim and the mitzvah to make Tzitzit tells us that Tzitzit override Kilayim. Aseh Doka Lo Taseh. That only works well for Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, who believes that the word Beged means Tzemru Pishtim. The problem is for the Rabbonon, who disagree with Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel and say that the word Beged has a broader meaning. The word Beged means any material. If that's the case, then we need the words Tzemru Pishtim over here by Kilayim to define for us what exactly is Kilayim. Because without it, we wouldn't have assumed that it was Tzemru Pishtim. So Gemara now asks, according to the Rabbonon, who disagree with the Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, Minaluhu, where did they learn out this din? Now, again, they're trying to learn out this din within the position of Rabbi Yehuda. They could just say, we don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. And we're Doresh Smuchim, even when it's not Muchach, even when it's not Afnuye. There's Smuchim all over the Torah. But the Gemara wants to establish, even within the position of Rabbi Yehuda, how do the Rabbonon establish this din? So the Gemara then says, Nafkaluhu me Rosho. They learn it out of the word Rosho. And that is by the Tarata Mitzora, it says, Baya Bayom Hashivi'i. On the seventh day, Yigalach et kol Se'aro. He will shave off all of his hair. You could have ended the pasuk there, and he would have said, on the seventh day, the mitzora is required to shave all of his hair. Yet it goes on to specify and says, ve'et rosho, ve'et zikano, ve'et gabot einav. It says that it has to do his head, his beard, his eyebrows, ve'et kol se'aro, and again, all of his hair, yigaleach, v'chibes begadav, v'chatsi b'sero b'mayim v'taher. What you see in this pasuk is that the pasuk already defines for you all hair must be shaved off. But then it specifies Roshos, Kano, Gabot Einav. Why does it take these words and specify them? The truth is that the Gemara in other places learns out a Klalu Pratu Klal from this. You have a general statement of it, Kol Se'aro. You have then the specific statements of Roshos, Kano, and Gabot Einav. And then again, Vet Kol Se'aro. So that's a Klalu Pratu Klal to tell you what type of hair has to be shaved off, has to be hair that is bunched together, that is visible, so on and so forth. Tell us what says you can learn that out of Gabot Einav. That would be the Prat. That leaves us over Roshon's Kano, which the Gemara is going to discuss here, that are extraneous. Those extraneous words are going to teach us something. Nafilu mi Rosho. D'tanya. Rosho, mata olom adomar. Why do you need the word Rosho by the Mitzorah? Lefisha namar. Because the Pasuk says, lo takifu pe'at roshchem. You're not allowed to cut off the corners of your hair. You're not allowed to cut off your peyot. Shomeani af Mitzorah kein. I would have thought that that was true by a Mitzorah as well. And Mitzorah would be restricted from cutting off his peyot. Tamaloma Rosho. We have a specific pasuk that teaches us by Mitzorah that you must cut off the corners of your head, despite the fact that there's an Isur of Lo Takivu Pa'at Roshchem. Because Savar Haitano, and this Tana believes, Hakafat Kol Rosh Ma Hakafa. This happens to be a machloket. When one shaves off their entire head, do you have to leave the peyot? Meaning that is the Isur of Lo Takivu Pa'at Roshchem to cut off the corners of your head only apply when you leave the remaining hair? And then there's a problem of cutting off the corners. But if you take all the hair off, there are no more corners because you're taking everything off. Maybe in that case it would be mutar. Or do we say even when you take off all your hair, there's still a restriction against removing the corners? So we're assuming here, this is according to the one who says that even when you remove all your hair from your head, there's still a restriction against cutting off your peyote. So here, we would have had a restriction to cut off one's peyote. And we come along and we say from the word rosho, this extraneous word of rosho, we say the aseh of Mitzorah to cut all of his hair trumps the lot aseh of cutting off the peyot. Gemara says, Igal Mifrach. You can't extrapolate from here to other dinim that aseh is dochelot aseh. Malolav da'akava, shekin lav she'en shaveh bakol. Problem here is that the lot aseh over here by lot takipu pat roshchem does not apply to everyone. It only applies to men. It doesn't apply to women. What the Gemara is doing over here, and it's done it a number of times, is aseh dochelot aseh. When we look at a normal aseh, that's dochelot aseh, there might be some times where the lot aseh is weak, and that's the reason that the aseh overcomes the lot aseh, is because the lot aseh is weak. That's the case, we can't extrapolate from it. The other way may be true as well, which is sometimes the aseh is so strong that it overcomes the lot aseh, but a regular aseh couldn't. What the Gemara just said over here was, that was a nice example of aseh dochelot aseh, but the problem is you can't use this as a paradigm. Because the lot aseh over here is a weaker form of lot aseh, because she'enu shaveh bakol, not everyone has this restriction. Ella, atyam is gano. We learn it out of gano, which is also mentioned in that pasuk that we just read, that the beard of the mitzvah is cut off. Ditanya, zgano, matamalomer. Why does he have to tell us to take off the beard? It already says that kol mesero, you have to remove all the hair. Fisha namar ufat zikanam lo yigaleichu, you may not remove the corners of your beard. Shomei ani af kohen mitzora kain. I would think that a kohen who's in mitzora would be then restricted from removing his beard. The restriction of upagat zganam lo yigaleichu is written in Parshat Emor, which applies to the kohanim. The Gemara in other places in Makot and Shavuot deals with how that also applies to Bnei Yisrael more broadly. But the Isser is written by a kohen. So now we have the din by a kohen that he may not remove his beard. We have a requirement by mitzora that he remove his beard. So Talmud Omer Zekano. Zekano comes to teach you that Zekano says remove the beard even though there's a restriction against removing the beard. So the aseh to remove the hair of the mitzora overcomes, trumps the lot aseh of not shaving one's beard. V'me'enu inyan d'lav she'enu shaveh bekol. Tneyu l'inyan d'lav ha'shaveh bekol. Once again here, you could argue this is not a lav that applies to everybody. First of all, if you believe it applies to a kohen and not to Bnei Yisrael, then certainly it only applies to kohenim. Number two is, if it only applies to men and not to women, again, it's a lav she'enu shaveh bekol. So once again, I cannot extrapolate from this. But the Gemara says now, I have two limudim in a row, Rosho and Zgano, that teach me the exact same thing. Aseh is doche lot aseh, when the lot aseh is a weaker lot aseh, a lot aseh she'enu shaveh bekol. Lot aseh that's not equivalent for everyone. Now, there's no necessity of the Torah to do something like that, to give us two examples of the exact same thing. So we have a principle, which is that once I have a limud, and then the Torah repeats the limud, if it's unnecessary, then tneyu li'inyan. Bring it into something that is necessary, and that's what the Gemara says here. If it's not necessary for lav she'en shaveh bekol, because I can already learn that out of Rosho, then tneyu inyan the lav ha'shaveh bekol. Let us learn from this that it applies even to lavim, that are normal lavim, that aseh dochelot aseh. That's what this extra limud of Zgano is going to teach us. My says, Vakati itzrich, salka dat chamina, shiny kohanim. Hov riba hena Torah, mitzvot yuterot. Or hov riba hena katuv, mitzvot yuterot. I would have thought maybe the kohanim are different over here. I need zikano to come here to override the lav. At this point, I thought the lav was so weak, therefore the aseh overrides the lav, but because of that, I couldn't use it as a paradigm to extrapolate. Now the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe it's the other way around. The lav is so strong that the aseh wouldn't have naturally overcome it. And that's why I need Zkano over here to tell you that even though this is a very strong lav, because the Kohanim have extra mitzvot and extra lavim, but nevertheless, the aseh is still able to overcome it despite that fact. And that's what it says here. Hol v'riba enakadu mitzvot yitzirot, afil lav shein shaveh bagolo dochi. Maybe the aseh would not be strong enough to overcome that lav, even though the lav is not a general lav. Kamash v'lon de dochi. So I need it here. So now I have Rosho and Zkano. Rosho teaches me that an aseh can overcome a lav that's a weaker lav, she'enu shaveh bekol. The Zkano comes to teach me that an aseh can overcome a lav, she'enu shaveh bekol, even though it applies to kohanim, which makes it into a stronger lav, because kohanim sometimes have extra restrictions, which makes the lav a little stronger. Maybe it should not be overcome. So that's why I have over here, Kamash Malon, that Zkano teaches me that that does happen over here. Ela atyami Rosho, the hach tano. We'll learn out of Rosho from this Tano. Ditanya, Rosho, Ma Talmud Lomar. What does Rosho come to teach you over here by Mitzora? Lefi Shenemar, Ta'ar, Lo Yavor, Al Rosho. When it comes to a Nazir, it says that a Nazir may not cut his hair. Shomei Ani Af Mitzora Nazir. What happens if a Nazir is also a Mitzora? And now in order to become Tahor from his Tzara'at, he has to cut off all of his hair, including the hair on his head, which the Torah says that he may not remove. So Tamaloma Rosho, that's what Rosho comes to do. Rosho here comes to tell you the assay of cutting off the hair of the Mitzorah trumps the lotasay by the Nazir. Where it says, Igalamifrach, Mala Nazir, Mitzorah, Shekin Yeshno Bisheila. Nazir is a weaker form of lav. Once again, you can't use this as a paradigm to establish that assay doche lotasay, because over here, the lotasay is a weaker lotasay. Why is it a weaker lotasay? Because you're talking about a lotasay of a Nazir. A Nazir has the ability to undo his Nizirut. Nizirut is a type of neder. It's a type of oath or pledge that a person makes. He can go to the Chacham afterwards and say, I regret, I made a mistake, I didn't really think through this situation, and therefore I want a petach l'neder. I want you to undermine, overturn this neder, du hatarat nedarim. So since he has the ability to unwind it, the Isurim of Nazir are not really strong Isurim. They're Isurim that are generated through a neder that can be unwound. So because of that, maybe that's why the assay over here of cutting the hair of the Mitzorah overrides the Nazir because of that weakness in the lav. But if that's the case, then I cannot extrapolate from there to other places. Dilo temahochi. Then if that's not the case, haida gaimelon, den assay doche lota seva assay. The principle that we have other places in Shas, which is, yes, an assay is strong enough to overcome a lota assay, but an assay is not strong enough to overcome an assay and a lota assay. And again, in the past, I've explained to you why that doesn't happen. Ligamer mi Nazir. Nazir should set a precedent then, or a paradigm. Nazir, by cutting the hair of the Nazir, there's both an assay and a lota assay. There is an assay which is Kadosh Iye Gadol Pera, and there's a lota assay which is Tar Lo Yovar El Rosho. So you have both a lota assay to not cut his hair and an assay to keep his hair on. And yet over here we're saying that the cutting of the hair of the Mitzorah trumps. That means assay docha lota assay vassay. Well then, if that's the case, let Nazir be a paradigm for Kol HaTorah Kula and say that assay is docha even in a lota assay and assay. Why do we not say that? Elam Nazir, my time alo gamrinan. Why don't we extrapolate from Nazir to Kol HaTorah Kula? Because there's a weakness in Nazir that doesn't allow us to extrapolate to other dinim, which is Shekin Yeshno B'Sheila. That weakness allows the assay of Mitzorah to overcome not only a lota assay but Nazir, but even a lota assay and assay. Nazir is a weaker form of restriction, and therefore we can't extrapolate from it. Whatever din applies there is fine, but that we can't extrapolate more broadly. So now I have a problem. I tried through Rosho with Mitzorah to say I can extrapolate from that assay docha lota assay. Doesn't work because the lota assay of lota kifu bat roshchem only applies to men, not to women. It's not a lota assay that is a regular lota assay. It's a weak lota assay. I tried to buy Zekano. I had the same problem. By the beer, that's not a lota assay that applies to everybody. I said, wait, I have two dinim that are telling me the exact same thing. Maybe I should then upgrade it and say, well, then it teaches me about a regular lota assay. The Gemara says, no, because there I would have had to have me the other way, that it's a stronger lota assay. Even though it doesn't apply to everybody, it's a stronger lota assay because of the Kohanim. And Kohanim have extra mitzvot, and maybe it applies, and you can't override it. That's why I need Zekano. Mar goes, let me try something else. I'll use the Rosho here, that the Rosho by Mitzvot overrides the Isurim of Nazir. Mar says, you can't extrapolate from that, because again, Nazir is a weaker form of a lav, because it has the ability for Hatarat Nidarim. And for that reason, that's also why we don't learn out from Mitzvot cutting his hair, which is an assay, overriding the lota assay and assay of cutting the hair of the Nazir, that Kol HaTorah Kula assay is doka lota assay v'assay, because Nazir cannot be extrapolated to Kol HaTorah Kula, because Nazir is a weaker form of restriction. So now the Gemara says, alright, we'll have to move on to something else. Elo Olam Mikra Kama. We have to go back to Kilayim and Tzitzit, even for the Rabbonon. But how do they learn it out? Im Kein Lemekra Tzitzit Teselach. You should say the pasuk, instead of saying gidilim taselach, it should use the term tzitzit. The word tzitzit is found in the parsha and shlach. So over here in Sefer Dvarim, why doesn't it use the same term tzitzit? Why does it use the word gidilim? Lamali, shmamina lefnuye. That's an extraneous word, and therefore we're doj resh smuchim. Gemara says, hai lishiura hudata. That gidilim is not extraneous. That comes to teach us how many strings you need. Gedil, by definition, means braided or put together, and it requires two strings for that. Shnayim. Gedilim in plural, the minimum of a plurality is two. So gedilim is arba. That's how I know you need four strings by the tzitzit. Ase gedil, upotleo mitocho. There are two different ways to learn this. Rashi learns this, ase gedil, make the knots, and then upotleo mitocho, leave the strings hanging at the bottom. And then he says that's how we know that the knots at the top is one-third. The gdil, the part that's knotted and wrapped, is one-third. And the part where, putleo mitocho, the strings are ptilim, are just strings hanging, is two-thirds of it. That's the way our tzitzit look. Tosafot says, well, if you do that, then you really don't know that the four strings over here are really put through the hole and made into eight strings. How do you know that? So he says, that's what it means over here. Upodleo mitocho. That's the definition of upodleo mitocho. Means pull the strings through. Make them into ptilim, through the hole. How do you do that? If you push the four strings through the hole, not tie them at the hole, but push them through, you end up with eight strings. So Tosafot reads upodleo mitocho slightly differently. Right? It says, imkein lemekra lo tilbash shatnez semer upishtim. The pasuk would try a new approach and says, let the pasuk here just say, don't wear a shatnez. Semer upishtim. They need semer upishtim because they don't hold like Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, so they didn't know about semer upishtim. But end the pasuk there. Yachdav lomali. The word yachdav at the end of the pasuk, why is that necessary? Shmamin olef nuye. It must be extraneous. And once again, I can be doresh smuchim now, and that'll teach me that tzitzit overrides kilayim. The Gemara says, akati mi bailet, the tokev shtei tekifot chibur. But tekifa achat enu chibur. Yachdav comes to teach me that the violation of kilayim only takes place when you attach the tzemer and pishtim together. When you put them together in such a manner that they will not come apart easily. That means they have to put in two stitches. How exactly that works in terms of two stitches, whether it means two full stitches, or that means one up and one down in the stitching. But something that does not come apart easily, it has to be pulled apart, it won't automatically fall apart. That is considered a bichibur, and that's a problem with kilayim. You just put the needle through one time, then it'll fall apart by itself. And that's not considered to be kilayim, but that you learn out of the word yachdav. Yachdav means that they have to actually be connected, the tzemer upishtim, in order to be problematic. Where it says, imkein lektov rachmana lo tilbash tzemer upishtim yachdav. Shatnez, lomali. The apostle just said, don't wear wool and linen together. Why do you need the word shatnez mentioned here? Shmamina lefnuya, again, it's an extraneous word. Where it says, akata mi baile. We need the word shatnez to teach us the din, achye shua, tavi, unos. Tells you what you have to do to the tzemer upishtim in order to be chayav. Rashi over here learns that mina Torah, you're not chayav in shatnez, ad sheyer tzemer upishtan mitukan yachad heitev v'masrek. They have to be worked together nicely with a comb. So shua is lashon chalak. You have to make it smooth. You have to actually pull the strings and make them nice and smooth, comb the strings out. Number two is you have to have it tovoy, which means it has to be spun. And then you have to have it nose is arug, means woven together. The way Rashi seems to indicate over here is, first of all, the tzemer and pishtim have to be processed together. That's the first assumption of Rashi. And the second assumption of Rashi is that even as they are processed together, so too the final stage of weaving is indicated through the word nose, which means to weave them together. That's the way Rashi learns shua tov even nose over here. Tosafot disagrees with both issues. Number one is he doesn't think they have to be processed together. He thinks that tzemer and pishtim can be processed separately in each of these stages. In addition to that, he believes, if that's the case, then nose can't be weaving, because weaving means automatically they're together. So nose must be something else. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam explains that nose is not arigah, like Rashi says, to weave, but rather, a nose is to twine them, and to make them into a thread by twining them. And that's what he says. Arigah is learned out of the word yachdav, that you have to put them together in order to be chayav. This has major nafkamina, going to Rashi, in order to be violation of shatnez vina Torah, you have to process them together all the way through. And that's very unlikely to happen. That means that most instances you're dealing with shatnez, which is a problem only midrabanan. According to Tosafot, they can be processed separately, but they have to be processed to that point in time. And then you can bring them together to weave them. He says if you don't say that, then you have a problem. Because then how is the tzitzit a problem of kilayim? Tzitzit are not processed together. They, linen and wool, are not processed together, not put together. The only last thing they're done is that they're tied together. They're knotted together. That's only the last stage. But before that point in time, they were not processed together. You have a beged of linen, and now you're just putting the tzemer into the hole on the side to hang the string. There's no processing together. And that's his proof against Rashi that it can't be that they're processed together, but it must mean that they are processed separately. Ella kula mishatnez nafko. The Gemara says, no, we learn all of this out of shatnez. The word shatnez here wasn't necessary to use. You could have used the word kilayim instead of shatnez. That's number one. Number two is, once you use the word shatnez, you could have said shua tavi and nose if you wanted to learn it out. Yet it contracted it into a single word. So here the word is extraneous because, number one, you could have used the word kilayim. It didn't use the word kilayim, it used shatnez to tell you shua tavi and nose. But then it could have written them separately. The fact that it contracted it into a single word, that allows me to learn another din that this is extraneous. So now we have a rule that Ashkachan de'atiyasei v'dachi lo tasei greida. We finally come to the point where we've established the fact that a regular assay is docha lo tasei from kilayim b'tzitzit. Either the way that Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel learns it out, or the way the Rabbanan learn it out. Over here, the smuchim. The juxtaposition of these two psukim teaches us that tzitzit trumps kilayim, and even according to Rabbi Yehuda, though generally does not learn smuchim, over here we found an extraneous term, either for Tana Debei Shmuel Tzemer Pishtim, or for the Chachamim, the word shatnez, which allows us to learn out here that they are doche, there is smuchim, and that we have an assay that is doche, a regular lot assay. But we have a problem, because our case over here, by Yibum, is a lot assay sheesh bo karet. It's a negative precept of Barayot that has a punishment of karet. Heicha ashkan dedochi. That's a much stronger lav. Where do we ever find precedence that an assay, a positive commandment, overrides a negative precept that involves a punishment of karet? The istrich aleha, the misra. That we need this gezeira shava of aleha aleha to teach you that it's asur. Why would you have thought it's mutar that I need aleha to teach me it's asur? V'chita ima nelef mimila. Let us learn now from Brit Milah. Milah is doche at Shabbat. So Milah is an assay, and it's doche lo tasei of Shabbat, which involves a lo tasei sheyesh bo karet. It says, Mala Milah shekein nichrutu aleha shlosh esrei britot. Wait a minute, you're right. The lav of Shabbat is a strong lav because it's a lav sheyesh bo karet. But guess what? The assay of Milah is also a super assay. You know why it's a super assay? Because in Breishit, when Hashem makes the covenant with Abraham about the brit, he mentions the fact that it's a brit, it's a covenant 13 times. There's something unique about the assay of Brit Milah, which allows it to overcome even a strong lav, because it's a super assay. So when it says mi Pesach, we'll learn it out from the fact that Korban HaPesach is Doche HaShabbat. The Shechita HaPesach, the working of the Korban HaPesach is Doche HaShabbat. When it says Ma HaPesach Shekein Karet. The assay of Pesach, and this is true of the assay of Milah as well, involves a punishment of Karet if one does not accomplish it. It's the only two mitzvot assay that involve Karet. So once again, yes, it overrides the lot assay sheyesh bo karet of Shabbat, but that's because it's a super assay. It's not a regular assay. It's an assay sheyesh bo karet. So we can't extrapolate from there. Yibum's not a super assay. Elami tamid. We'll learn out of the Korban tamid. The Korban tamid is a Korban that's brought every day, including Shabbat. So Korban tamid is a regular assay, and it overrides Shabbat. Where it says, Mada tamid shekein tadir. Wait a minute. Tamid is a regular occurring Korban. It happens every single day. Because of that, again, it's a super assay because it recurs all the time. That super assay allows you to overcome Shabbat, which is a lot assay sheyesh bo karet. Now, the truth is, what about other korbanot? Now, with other korbanot, you could answer, like, for instance, the korbanei musaf of the holidays. There, you could just answer that that's the specific tzivoy. The tzivoy is to bring them on Shabbat. So it's not that it's doche Shabbat. It's the fact that they're commanded to be brought on Shabbat. It's not an assay doche lot assay. That is the command. That's when they're supposed to be brought. Now, you could argue with certain other korbanot that maybe when they fell out on Shabbat, they should not be Doche Shabbat. The way the Rabbeinu Tam answers that question and says that all korbanot are considered to be Tadir, because korbanot recur. Anything that's Doche Shabbat always recurs, whether it recurs on a weekly basis, whether it recurs on a daily basis, or whether it recurs on a yearly basis. That's the reason it overcomes Shabbat, because it's a recurring item. Recurring items are considered to be Tadir, and therefore they can overcome Shabbat, because they're more like a super assay. So again, you can answer either way. When it comes to those korbanot, like the Omer or the Musafim, it's because they're specified to be brought then. That's why they overcome Shabbat and you can't learn anything from it. Or you could argue, like here, that it's also Tadir because it happens on a yearly basis, or by Rosh Chodesh on a monthly basis, Shabbat on a weekly basis. That's enough to be called Tadir and makes it into a super assay that overcomes lot assay sheyesh bo karet. But once again, I cannot extrapolate from here to other cases. So when it says, Mechada lo atyo, you're right. I can't learn out of one of these three examples. Teite mitarti. Let me learn out of two of them. Mahi. Which ones would you do that? Teite mi Milah u'Pesach. Learn it out from Milah and Pesach. Shekein karet. They're both mitzvot assay that have a karet. So they're both super assays. They have a common denominator. You can't extrapolate from them. Mi Pesach v'tamid. You want to learn out of Korban Pesach and the Korban HaTamid. Shekein tzorech gevoa. They both involve korbanot, which are brought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they involve matanot l'Hashem. Maybe that's the reason that they overcome the lot assay sheyesh bo karet. But regular assay, like Yibum, maybe that wouldn't overcome. Mimila and Tamid, Brit Mila and Tamid, you can't learn from them. Shekein, Yeshnan Lifnei Adibur. They both existed prior to Matan Torah. Mila is given to Avram Avinu. And the Tamid, we saw that Machloket in the Gemara and Chagiga, as to whether the Korbanot that they brought at Har Sinai, the Olot to Shlamim, were those Olot Korban Tamid or not. Here the Gemara is assuming, it's according to one who says the Olot were Lifnei Adibur. The Gemara can answer this question, as Tosfos points out, in different ways, because the Gemara sees all of these assays as being exceptional, and therefore it's not going to learn from them, because you could learn out that it's Tadir, you could learn out other reasons why they overcome their lot assay sheyesh bo karet that we can't extrapolate. Gemara is just trying to give you a little examples to show you that it doesn't work. It's not going through all the different stadim. So the Gemara says, Umekulu nami, shekein yeshlam lifnei dibur. We can't learn of all three of them together because they have a common denominator that they all existed prior to Matan Torah. Ela itztrich. That can't be the reason that we need this alea alea, because from here we can't learn out, and it says, Docha lota se shesh bakare. Ela, we're going to have to learn it out from Kibud Aveim. Alright, we're going to stop here, 7 lines from the bottom of Heimud Bet, with this next attempt by the Gemara to find an essay that's Docha Lota Se Sheish Bokarait. And they're going to do that through Kibud Avaim, and we'll discuss that tomorrow. So once again, the Gemara has yet to find a reason why we should believe that Yibum overcomes Arayot. Yibum's an essay, Arayot or a Lota Se, but they're also a Lota Se Sheish Bokarait, which makes it into a stronger lab. What's the reason that the Mitzvah essay of Yibum should overcome that Lota Se? We have no precedence for that, we have no paradigm. So then, once again, why do I need the word aleha here by Achotisha and aleha by Yibum to teach me don't think something is mutar, elo asur? Why would I ever thought it was mutar? And the Gemara has yet to find us a reason to believe why we would have said it was mutar for Yibum to overcome Arayot. Okay, we'll stop over here.